The B2B sales world is in turmoil. Quota attainment is down. Revenue growth has slowed. Turnover is up. All of this is in the face of ever-increasing pressure to perform. Is it a surprise that the average sales leader stays in place for only 12 to 18 months? That's barely enough time to start executing the strategy. These problems are fixable, and we are going to serve the sales leadership community with this show. I'm Lucas Price. I've launched and exited B2B startups and built elite sales organizations. Now I want to give back by bringing you this podcast, Building Elite Sales Teams. It will be full of actionable best practices to help you excel as a sales leader. We're going to burn the churn. Let's get back to winning. Building Elite Sales Teams is on. Welcome. This is Lucas Price, and I'm here to learn with you about building elite sales team. What if you need to make changes to your sales organization that will negatively affect many team members? This situation isn't pleasant, but nearly every sales leader will face it at some point. How we handle difficult situations says a lot about us as sales leaders. Today, we're talking with a sales leader who's been through this situation before, and he will share with us how to manage negative changes and come out stronger on the other side. David Archer is a seasoned executive sales leader, family man, and weekend lacrosse referee based here in Seattle. With over two decades of experience, David's knack for directing global sales teams and closing record-breaking deals has taken him from startup environments to IPO launches. At Zycus, David served as a VP of sales, CLM, and e-signature, where he directed a global team in a startup environment. He achieved significant milestones, including closing the largest deal in division history. Prior to Zycus, as VP of inside sales at Icertis, David led a high-performing team to consistently beat its plan. David's career also includes notable roles such as senior director of sales, where he played a pivotal role in the organization's growth from $70 million to $300 million and its IPO, and chief revenue officer at Avidian, where he led the global sales strategy, driving substantial revenue growth. David, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Lucas. It's a pleasure to be here.
I hope I didn't mess up the pronunciation on too many of those company names there.
I have a lot of really random names that I've worked for. So it's not like Kodak, or it makes it very easy to say.
So, yeah. I've shared a little bit about your background there, but how did you get into sales originally?
It's a little bit of a long story. I was standing on the sidelines of a Princeton football game my junior year, and one of my best friend's fathers came up to me, and he was a psychologist, and he said, "Hey, Dave, you'd be a great salesperson." And I just hadn't thought about that the entire time. And of course, I'm on the sidelines, so I'm not playing, but I had not thought about that. And so that summer, I went out, and just on a whim, I decided I was going to go to apply to the best seat on the street, just hardcore. Aging myself, but this is when you had door-to-door salespeople, hardcore sales programs. And what came up in my research was Xerox, who does a whole bunch of stuff. Gallo Wines, which if you walked into any store, had stuff placed all over the place. And this small company called Lanier that sold dictation systems, copiers, and office equipment. I applied at all three of them, telling them that I had already graduated. And the guy at Lanier closed me. And within 3 months, I just walked in there, and it was just everything to me. The chalkboard with the rankings and the number of stuff that he had sold and just the camaraderie. Everybody was in at 6:30 in the morning. We literally had a van where we would pull our, if somebody walked in and said, "Hey, I'd love to see a demo of what you have, or I'm interested in what you have. Do you have a brochure?" We'd pull out a copier or a dictation machine or whatever it was. We'd wheel it into the office and grab everybody in the office, stop their day, and demo them right there. So Lanier's proposition was pretty much they sold at 40% more than the entire rest of the market with no significant advantages except for the fact they trained their salespeople. I loved that, fell in love with it, did it for a summer job, came back the next year, and after I'd graduated, within 3-4 months, I was the number one salesperson on the East Coast, end of the year, number one salesperson in the country. And I just fell in love with sales since then. I now do stupid stuff like I read old time sales books written in like the 1920s. There's a manual by David Ogilvy, where he was selling soft top coating stuff in England. And he wrote a manual about how to do it. And he, 40 years later, he wrote a book calling himself the best salesperson in the world. And the old book is called How to Sell an Ag Cooker. It's entirely misogynistic and entirely of its times because it was guys selling to housewives at the time, but it's still a great read. And I believe in the art and the science of sales, and I totally do that stuff all the time.
Yeah. This is a little bit of an aside, but did you play football at Princeton?
I did. I was a defensive back that eventually got relegated to a position called, which I affectionately called it an ass back. Do you know what an ass back is? I don't know much about football. So I would go up to the coach and be like, "Coach, we're up 40-0 on Cornell. Can I get in?" And he'd be like, "All right, cheer. Hell no. Get your ass back."
Coincidentally, a couple weeks ago, we had in a recent episode of Building Elite Sales Teams, we interviewed Tim Strickland from Summit Partners, and he also played football at Princeton.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I guess we have a thing going on here by accident.
Yeah, it's a great cadre. I'm still on a text chain with probably like 40 of those guys. So it's a lot of fun.
That's great. And then what student of the game, the art and science of sales, had some success there. So a lot of people can continue to, it can be very lucrative if you're a successful salesperson.
And sure.
So it can be tempting to stay there instead of jumping into sales management. Why were you interested in sales management, or what made you take the leap to management rather than being a seller?
Yeah, my rise to sales management was, I think, pretty typical of salespeople, which is I came out to Seattle to start selling SaaS software, and I was successful at it. Ended up being running Asia for a company called Access Line, which is the beginnings of voice over IP. And then just simply grew through the company as your next logical step. I got to tell you, like, the first two or three steps, from being the individual contributor to being a sales manager to being a director to being VP, I really didn't think about it much. I was just selling, doing what I was doing. And really involved in it in every deal. And I know you've picked a kind of a really touchy topic for us to talk about today around, like, how do you make changes, especially at the quotas and the comp and midstream and everything else like that. It really wasn't until I got to that VP level that I really started contemplating and thinking and said, hey, I got to come back and start studying stuff, studying change. Studying organizations, what makes great organizations be adaptable to change? What makes great organizations really run regardless of kind of what's going on in front of them? Honestly, first four promotions were, I was just doing well as a salesperson. And then a lot changes when you're now responsible for everybody's quota. You're now responsible for a lot of lives. You're now responsible for more than just your friends, the folks you're going to go to war with. There's people in your organization that you don't really know that. And how do you make them successful? And how do you start thinking about it that way? Which was a big change for me.
Playing college football, even if you were mostly just going to practice each week and not playing the game. And then going, the story you told about Lanier and succeeding in a sales environment where you're getting people to pay more and there's not a lot of product differentiation. I think that takes a lot of resilience and drive to be able to do those things. And I'm sure there's many more things we could point to that you've accomplished. I know there are many more things that takes that same kind of resilience and drive. Is there a moment or something in your background that you'd point to that was like, oh yeah, this is where the flip switched for me, and I realized that I had to, or it gave me the ability to press on when some other, in situations where some other people can't?
Yeah, no, it started really early. It was probably like 2.5 months into my very first job at Lanier. And so we'd go in 6:30 every morning. I'd been out the night before, as any 2 or 23-year-old wants to do. And I'm sitting in the parking lot. It's 6 a.m. And I just don't want to go out my territory. I have nothing planned. It's an entirely cold calling day, right? I don't have any meetings. I don't have anything set up for me. I'm like, should I just go home? And a more senior rep pulls up next to me. Yeah, we'll have to be in there for another half hour. So I'm like a half hour early. And he sees me. I'm literally like, I'm leaning on my steering wheel. Right. And he taps on my window, knows exactly what's going on. And he just coached me through that moment. And he said a word that's always resonated with me throughout my entire career, and or a phrase that's always resonated with me through my entire career and keeps me going. He said, sales is about sustained effort. And I think that's important. You're always going to have your ups and downs. You're going to not be selling. Like, just because you're having a bad quarter doesn't mean you're a bad salesperson. Doesn't mean you're a bad person. Doesn't mean anything else, right? The only thing you control is your sustained effort. And so that's always resonated with me all the way through my sales career, is that it's not about active effort. It's not about not doing effort. It's about what is your level of sustained effort that you're willing to commit to every single day and get through.
Yeah, I love that. I think like one of the human nature challenges in sales is when you push through that and you get beyond that and things start to go your way, then it can be very tempting to let human nature kick in and pull back a little bit on the effort. And so the ability to succeed in sales is to fight. It's to be able to fight the impulses to quit when things are bad, but also be able to fight the impulse to let up when things are good.
I've been very fortunate to learn early in my career those lessons. I had the exact same thing, because there was a point when I was selling copiers, and I'm a Princeton grad selling copiers. I need to do something different. So my next job that I took was selling currencies. And I was like, okay, I now know how to sell. I know what it's all about. And I had been making a great level of income selling copiers. I was like the number one guy in the US. And whenever you're like number one coming in as an entry level salesperson and you're overselling of what the major account reps are doing, you make great money, right? So I had gotten like a boat and a motorcycle, and I did all this stuff, and then I joined this Wall Street firm to go sell. And I quickly realized that I couldn't do fractions in my head than half the people beside me, and quite frankly tanked. Couldn't do it. Just like all of the sales skills, all of the things that I had learned and that I thought I was great at, I really couldn't do. Fortunately, my old boss had gone to a city in Seattle and started a startup, and he called me and quite frankly rescued me from the concepts of currency trading and everything else like that. But yeah, you have to learn your lessons.
Yeah, those are some great stories. I appreciate you sharing them with us. Absolutely. About background. You've been through those situations where negative change are coming to a sales organization, and you have to prepare them for it, or you have to be the bearer of bad news. What are the things that you do in those situations to help them to come out positive on the other side?
Lucas, it's never easy. And as background, I grew up as the son of a foreign service officer. So I moved countries every 2 years. And every time I would go into work to see my dad, there was a Marine Corps officer or a Marine Corps dressed in dress blues letting you into the embassy. And so I've always had a tremendous respect. Like I always wanted to be a Marine. I always wanted to do all of those different types of things. And so as I was thinking about my change management strategy, I just naturally gravitated towards, how do the Marines do it? Because they're supposed to get people ready to be on a boat, on a beach, on a mountain, in the air, in a submarine, in an embassy, and highly effective. Adapt and overcome is their motto. And they do it, and they do it really well. And so what do you need to do in the back office to make sure that those Marines are ready to do what they do? If a Marine takes a hill, they know that they're hot lunched or cold lunch, whatever it is, a baker flying in with a bread oven is going to be there, and they're going to eat. So I spent a lot of time thinking about what the back end of a sales organization looks like. And as the same way that a Marine hates to be in Camp Lejeune, because there's nothing to do, it's very boring, it's very regimented, they'd rather be out in the field. Like they'd rather be taking fire than being in a barracks in Camp Lejeune. The way the Marines do that is they're dialed in on their back office. So as I think about sales process, I think about the sales communication methods. I think about all of the different things that go out to salespeople and touch salespeople and what your expectations as a salesperson are. That needs to be highly controlled. If the entire management organization is focused on three metrics, you can't allow your CEO to sit down and talk with the sales person about metric number five that he's never, that we've never communicated and he doesn't know about, or she doesn't know about and isn't part of their repertoire. To give you an example, if you're going to, and this happens all the time and for a lot of like really great reasons. If you're going to change quotas or change comp plan midstream, and I've done this a few times and it's necessary, right? You're running a business. It's stuff that you got to do. You have to go through a very defined process of how you communicate, of describing the why, of making sure that it's agreed upon throughout a large level of the organization. You got to set clear expectations for what's going forward. You got to provide training and support, and then you got to celebrate the successes as it goes forward. And it's not like a one-time communication. It's a process that needs to happen again and again.
When you talk about the back office always being prepared, when we think of the types of challenges that we face in sales organizations where you're moving up market, you're leaving a part of the market, you're opening up a new part of the market, whatever it is, and this is going to lead to some of your existing sellers probably are going to end up not being a fit anymore because you're selling into a different market and maybe they've been making a lot of money on an old comp plan. You move up market, that makes the old comp plan, now it's not attractive to them. They don't want to go and sell to the new market. So there are these changes that are going to affect people within the organization negatively. What does it mean to have the back office is always prepared, the back office is organized in that situation in a way to make that as smooth of a transition as possible?
Yeah, great question. So let me give you the opposite.
Okay. Right?
You're going into a new market and you want to take your best sellers and prove that market out.
Yeah.
And to them, so think of the Marines. If you told the Marine who's on the front lines in some type of engagement, I have a special operation for you. I'd like you to go do this. It's much more dangerous. It's likely to result in a lot more problems, right? What would that Marine say? Be like, absolutely. This is who we are. This is what I want to do. I get it. This is where I'm going to go. And they say that because they know you're going to take care of them, right? So having a culture where the cadre and everybody understands that just because I'm taking a risk as a senior executive or as a company, or anything else like that, that's not going to fall on you as an individual is really important. You may go and fail. And if you do fail, we'll take care of you because you've done well. You've done well in the past. You're a part of this culture, everything else like that. It's sometimes a really hard concept to get through to executives in startups, in other organizations that in the cases that you're talking about. Now, the other cases you were specifically talking about, yeah. There's some people who can't adapt to change. That's fine. Marines churn people all the time.
I love the example that you gave us. And I think that's one of the really important points is that you have to have a culture where risk takers aren't going to be blamed. I think part of making that, having a prepared back office as well, is making sure that before the salesperson gets moved into the new market where they're taking a risk, there's product is aligned to that market and marketing is aligned to that market. And you've done the sales enablement and the product marketing. And so that they're not going in there by themselves as well. When they get to the top of the hill, everything, their dinner's going to be there. The rest of the organization is going to be there supporting them as well. Is that part of what you mean by the back office is always really organized?
Yeah. In a perfect world, we know it never works that way. The Marine Corps will tell you, hey, your dinner's not going to be there when you get there, all right? They have a term for it, FUBAR. I won't repeat it, but everybody knows what it is. So there is this concept of, hey, we are going to deliver the truth. We're going to deliver the parameters of what can make you successful, and we're going to hold you accountable to those parameters. And what we're not going to worry about is everything else, because here's what we got. I don't have marketing for this. I need you to cold call. We need to do this. We need to do that. Are you ready to go do this? Because the success metric is huge, or it's not, or it's important to the larger why. Either way, the back office has to be aligned with that. If there is somebody in the back office that's saying, I'm not really sure that's the way we should be doing it. There's politics involved or anything else like that. That's going to land right on that salesperson that's working without marketing, working without this, working without that, and trying to take that hill.
Going through these changes, you've mentioned a few of the mistakes to avoid. Is there anything else that our listeners should keep in mind if they're charging into some changes, they need to make some of these changes, and there are things that they should watch out to make to avoid?
Yeah, it's you, even if you're not getting agreement across the entire organization, you need to get agreement on the messaging, right? You need to get agreement on the why, and that why and that agreement for whatever change it is. And we've been talking about comp plan changes, which are the kind of the most emotional, but any change, you need to get agreement on the why across the entire organization, because it's important to the tip of the spear. And as a sales leader, you have to go do that. You have to figure out a way to align your internal organization around the why of whatever change, whatever changes is making. And we're specifically talking about changes that will ultimately be detrimental to the salesperson, because if it's for decreasing quota and increasing comp, yeah, that's easy. And that rarely happens in organizations. But making those changes and having that back office aligned, absolutely critical.
Yeah. I know an important part of your philosophy as a sales leader is that sales is a team sport. Can you tell us a little bit about what you mean by that?
Sure. I don't think it's a surprise to anybody. I think everybody understands that I couldn't sell this myself, because if you could, you wouldn't even be in this company, right? Like, you'd be selling it yourself. The concept of selling internally and communicating internally is for me just as an important metric. And in the one-on-ones, talking about that and coaching on that and going through that concept of a team sport, who's your team on this organization? What reservations does your sales engineer have about how we're about this proposal? Is he aligned with his boss? Have you talked to his boss? Have you talked to your SDR to like help in this project? Who are the other internal people that you have reaching out to your customer, and do they have the right messaging, and have they done it? Have you held them accountable? It's highly important. It's sales 101. It's a team sport.
Do you have anything that like really brought that as one of the key pillars to you? So we understand, everyone understands it's a team sport. You gave those hypotheticals, but not everyone has it near the top of their list is one of the most important things. Anything that happened that really made it a key factor for you?
Yes. I would question any salesperson that says I did it alone, right? Like I got this sale. Nobody else was involved. It was all me. I was the one who did this. I was the one who got the lead. I created the marketing materials. I didn't copy any slide decks. Doesn't exist in any win. And most software companies send out a win call around all of the people that are involved. Every single time there's somebody that's left off, and when somebody gets left off, they get pissed. And the reason they get pissed is because they actually did contribute.
So when you've stepped into organizations in the past and there hasn't been the level of teamwork that you like to see, what are things that you do? How do you think about making that a more prominent part of the culture of the sales org?
In the extreme case, I borrow, like same way I borrow from Marines, I'm a borrow from software, right? And when you are building software so that you have a number of different areas that need to communicate and need to know what they're doing, and each layer is getting built independently, essentially, By different people, what do they do? They scrum every day. There's a software scrum, and they talk about, this is what I'm doing, here's what happened, blah, 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 here's how it's going to affect you, et cetera. The extreme example of that is you have a 15-minute call where you get all of the players on every single day until they understand, this is how I need to communicate, this is what I need to do. I don't know any salesperson that I've ever met that can't find 15 minutes a day in their schedule. You may miss one, be on a plane. You may miss two a week, be on a plane, but we're gonna form a habit until we fix the culture, until we fix whatever it is, to be able to do this. And we'll include anybody that we need to do. And we're gonna go round robin so that everybody speaks. Everybody tells us what they're doing that day, what their opinion is that day. So we start communicating.
That's a great practice for when you're trying to build those initial building blocks of a team. What are the other team building pillars for you?
So a few things. Communication rep to rep, super important. How do you facilitate that? And how do you coach that? There is a tendency for managers to answer questions versus my bias is to say, great question, call, I don't know, call so-and-so on that, because I know so-and-so knows. Especially in this world of where we're all virtual and we were having a weekly call where really all we're talking about is your funnel. And that's the weekly calls, a lot of it is just about me, like being able to report to the organization and you being able to hear that other people are being successful or having problems. Coaching piece of how do I get better as a salesperson? And I talk a lot about, are you a sales professional or are you going to be a professional salesperson? Right. And which one is better? And is my hand in the right place? And how do I do that? And how do I practice that over and over and over again? Sales is as much a skill as it is an art, and you can practice those things. And the only place you get to practice it is with your peers. At practice with your peers, not on a call with a customer. So that peer-to-peer interaction is critical for me. I need you to go role play now around this topic. Invite two other people, I need you to go coach this SDR on how to do this. You're responsible for this piece. You now need to be the teacher. Those type of interactions are really important to me.
Yeah. David, lots of great information that you've shared with us today. Lots of great practices that you've learned through a successful career in sales leadership. For the things we've talked about, if you were to pick out a couple of the most important takeaways for our listeners, what would you give them as a couple to summarize our conversation today?
I think overall, just be purposeful. There's so many things in my life that I've done that have not lacked purpose, but been without the concept of purpose behind it. And so make sure that you're, as a leader, make sure you're thinking about how to be purposeful about what you do.
Yeah, that's great. One of my takeaways is that it's really important that to have a culture where risk takers are going to be rewarded and not punished when the risks don't work out. I think that's a great reminder for all of us. I very much appreciate you joining us today. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you online?
Yeah, on LinkedIn at David Archer. I think I'm David M. Archer at LinkedIn.
If you enjoyed this episode of Building Elite Sales Teams, please leave us a review in your podcast app. You can find more of our content online at yardstick.team. Look at our blog. And if you have any feedback for us, you can connect with me on LinkedIn. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for joining us today on Building Elite Sales Teams. Please remember to give us a 5-star review. And if you want more information about Yardstick, you can find us at www.yardstick.team. You can follow me or connect with me on LinkedIn by searching for Lucas Price.